Has it ever occurred to you how astonishing the culture of Western society really is? Industrialized nations provide their citizens with unprecedented safety, health, and comfort. Average lifespans increased 50% in the last century. Yet modern people live in abject fear. They are afraid of strangers, of disease, of crime, of the environment. They are afraid of the homes they live in, the food they eat, the technology that surrounds them. They are in a particular panic over things they can't even see. Germs, chemicals, additives, pollutants. They are timid, nervous, fretful, and depressed. And even more amazingly, they are convinced that the environment of the entire planet is being destroyed around them. Remarkable. Like the belief in witchcraft, it's an extraordinary delusion. A global fantasy worthy of the Middle Ages. Everything is going to hell, and we must all live in fear. Amazing. How has this worldview been instilled in everybody? Because although we imagine we live in different nations, France, Germany, Japan, the U.S., in fact, we inhabit exactly the same state. The state of fear. How has that been accomplished? Evan said nothing. He knew it wasn't necessary. Well, I shall tell you how, he said. In the old days, before your time, Peter, citizens of the West believed their nation-states were dominated by something called the military-industrial complex. Eisenhower warned Americans against it in the 1960s, and after two world wars, Europeans knew very well what it meant in their own countries. But the military-industrial complex is no longer the primary driver of society. In reality, for the last 15 years, we have been under the control of an entirely new complex, far more powerful and far more pervasive. I call it the political-legal media complex, the PLM, and it is dedicated to promoting fear in the population under the guise of promoting safety. Safety is important. Please. Western nations are fabulously safe, yet people do not feel they are because of the PLM. And the PLM is powerful and stable precisely because it unites so many institutions of society. Politicians need fears to control the population. Lawyers need dangers to litigate and make money. The media needs scare stories to capture an audience. Together, these three estates are so compelling that they can go about their business even if the scare is totally groundless. If it has no basis in fact at all. For instance, consider silicon breast implants. Evan sighed, shaking his head. Breast implants? Yes. You will recall that breast implants were claimed to cause cancer and autoimmune diseases. Despite statistical evidence that this was not true, we saw high-profile news stories, high-profile lawsuits, high-profile political hearings. The manufacturer, Dow Corning, was hounded out of the business after paying $3.2 billion, and juries awarded huge cash payments to plaintiffs and their lawyers. 4 years later, definitive epidemiological studies showed, beyond a doubt, that breast implants did not cause disease. But by then, the crisis had already served its purpose, and the PLM had moved on, a ravenous machine seeking new fears, new terrors. I'm telling you, this is the way modern society works, by the constant creation of fear. And there is no countervailing force. There is no system of checks and balances, no restraint on the perpetual promotion of fear after fear after fear. Because we have freedom of speech, freedom of the press. That is the classic PLM answer. That's how they stay in business, Hoffman said. But think, if it is not all right to falsely shout fire in a crowded theater, why is it all right to shout cancer in the pages of the New Yorker, when that statement is not true? We've spent more than $25 billion to clear up the phony power line cancer claim. So what, you say? I could see it in your face. You're thinking, We're rich. We can afford it. It's only $25 billion. But the fact is that $25 billion is more than the total GDP of the poorest 50 nations of the world combined. Half the world's population lives on $2 a day. So that $25 billion would be enough to support 34 million people for a year. Or we could have helped all the people dying of AIDS in Africa. Instead, we piss it away on a fantasy published by a magazine whose readers take it very seriously. Trust it. It is a stupendous waste of money. In another world, it would be a criminal waste. One could easily imagine another Nuremberg trial, this time for the relentless squandering of Western wealth on trivialities, and complete with pictures of the dead babies in Africa and Asia that result. He hardly paused for breath. At the very least, we are talking about a moral outrage. Thus we can expect our religious leaders and our great humanitarian figures to cry out against this waste and the needless deaths around the world that result. But do any religious leaders speak out? No. Quite the contrary. They join the chorus. They promote, "What would Jesus drive?" As if they had forgotten that what Jesus would drive is the false prophets and fear-mongers out of the temple. He was getting quite heated now. We are talking about a situation that is profoundly immoral. It is disgusting, if truth be told. The PLM callously ignores the plight of the poorest and most desperate human beings on our planet in order to keep fat politicians in office, rich news anchors on the air, and conniving lawyers in Mercedes-Benz convertibles. Oh, and university professors in Volvos. Let's not forget them.
How's that? Evans said. What does this have to do with university professors?
Well, that's another discussion.
Is there a short version? Evans said.
Not really. That's why headlines aren't news, Peter. But I will try to be succinct, he said. The point is this. The world has changed in the last 50 years. We now live in the knowledge society, the information society, whatever you want to call it. And it has had enormous impact on our universities. 50 years ago, if you wanted to lead what was then called the life of the mind, meaning to be an intellectual, to live by your wits, you had to work in a university. The society at large had no place for you. A few newspaper reporters, a few magazine journalists could be considered as living by their wits, but that was about it. Universities attracted those who willingly gave up worldly goods to live a cloistered intellectual life, teaching timeless values to the younger generation. Intellectual work was the exclusive province of the university. But today, whole sectors of society live the life of the mind. Our entire economy is based on intellectual work now. 36% of workers are knowledge workers. That's more than work in manufacturing. And when professors decided they would no longer teach young people but leave that task to their graduate students, who knew much less than they did and spoke English poorly, when that happened, the universities were thrown into crisis. What good were they anymore? They had lost their exclusive hold on the life of the mind. They no longer taught the young. Only so many theoretical texts on the semiotics of Foucault could be published in any single year. What was to become of our universities? What relevance did they have in the modern era? He stood up, as if energized by this question. Then, abruptly, he sat down again. What happened, he continued, is the universities transformed themselves in the 1980s, formerly bastions of intellectual freedom in a world of babbitry, formerly the locus of sexual freedom and experimentation. They now became the most restrictive environments in modern society, because they had a new role to play. They became the creators of new fears for the PLM. Universities today are factories of fear. They invent all the new terrors and all the new social anxieties, all the new restrictive codes, words you can't say, thoughts you can't think.
They produce a steady stream of new anxieties, dangers, and social terrors to be used by politicians, lawyers, and reporters. Foods that are bad for you, behaviors that are unacceptable, can't smoke, can't swear, can't screw, can't think. These institutions have been stood on their heads in a generation. It is really quite extraordinary. The modern state of fear could never exist without universities feeding it. There is a peculiar neo-Stalinist mode of thought that is required to support all this, and it can thrive only in a restrictive setting, behind closed doors, without due process. In our society, only universities have created that, so far. The notion that these institutions are liberal is a cruel joke. They are fascist to the core, I'm telling you. He broke off and pointed down the walkway. Who is this fellow pushing toward us through the crowd? He looks oddly familiar. Evans said, That's Ted Bradley, the actor. Where have I seen him? He plays the president on television. Oh, yes, him. Ted came to a halt in front of them, panting. Peter, he said, I've been looking everywhere for you. Is your cell phone on? No, because Sarah has been trying to reach you. She says it's important. We have to leave town right away. And bring your passport. Evans said, We? What does this have to do with you? I'm coming with you, Ted said. As they started to walk away, Hoffman clutched at Evans's sleeve, holding him back. He had a new thought. We haven't talked about involution, he said. Professor, it is the next step in the development of nation-states. Indeed, it is already happening. You must see the irony. After all, $25 billion and 10 years later, the same rich elitists who were terrified of powerline cancer are buying magnets to strap to their ankles or put on their mattresses. Imported Japanese magnets are the best, the most expensive, in order to enjoy the healthful effects of magnetic fields. The same magnetic fields! Only now, they can't get enough of them. Professor, Evans said, I have to go. Why don't these people just lie back against a TV screen? Snuggle up to a kitchen appliance. All the things that terrified them before. We'll talk later, Evans said, pulling his arm away. They even sell magnets in the health magazines. Healthy living through magnetic fields. Insanity. No one remembers even a few years ago. George Orwell. No memory. Who is that guy? Bradley said, as they headed off. He seems a little wound up, doesn't he?